Good afternoon, everyone. And before I came here to the room, I went and looked at the computer with the online participants, delighted in seeing the faces that were there. And mostly there were tiles with names on. I delighted in seeing the tiles, the names, people I knew, and I delighted in seeing the names I didn't know. So it's very nice to have this wider circle as part of the retreat. Thank you, those of you online. And thank you, those of you who are here. So the talk today, one option you have for how to listen to it is to do a participatory listening. It's possible that this talk will be a journey. I like the idea of talks being kind of a journey. So a journey that you would accompany me on with your imagination. So if you're inclined, as I talk about the different things I talk about, you might very lightly, gently, see if you, with your imagination, your memory, you can bring to mind an image or a feeling or something that somehow might represent what I'm talking about for you. To do it lightly so you don't get lost in your fantasy about it. And then you've gotten off the train and of the journey that where the talk is about. But, you know, just it might actually help if you kind of get into the rhythm of it, you might be able to kind of participate more fully rather than understanding what I'm saying, participating in what I'm saying. And that's more what the practice is. Or practice is you're participating in the practice. The practice itself is kind of a journey, and you participate, you give yourself over to it. And with your attention, you enter into this world of here and now, into the current of here and now. And I'll use different images, different concepts. I'll talk a little bit about it. I'll use the image of a tree. Maybe there's a tree that you can bring to mind, a tree on this property that you've looked at a little bit in the orchard or the oak tree over here, the big oak tree by the path or one of the redwood trees or some tree you know from your life. I'll talk about a magic act. Maybe you can remember a magic act that you saw in the sense of wonder or surprise or awe or curiosity or disbelief that went along with seeing. I'll talk about cooking soup maybe. Have you ever cooked a pot of soup? What's that like? Talk about craving. Craving itself is an image that the Buddha uses. It's an analogy for grasping or clinging or something like that. But craving is like, actually the word the Buddha used is thirst, thirsting for something. And so what's been your experience of, do you have a memory of thirsting or craving, clinging to something? And so as I go through and talk about these things, then, you know, maybe you can kind of participatory. And at some point, I'll go through the five aggregates. Maybe there, too, you can participate by, as I'm talking about them, you can kind of like, oh, yeah, I can feel that. I can sense that in me. And of course, if you don't care to do that, you're welcome to not do it. So the most common way that the aggregates are referred to in the teachings of the Buddha is as the five aggregates of clinging, five areas in which we cling. So there's clinging to appearances, sensations. There's clinging to the feeling tones. There's clinging to what the ideas and concepts, recognitions we have. There's clinging to the mental formations, the constructive, generative activity of the mind. And there's clinging to consciousness. And that clinging to these things is the magic show. That as we cling, part of the clinging to these aggregates, one of them, all of them, is they obscure something. A good musician will do something fancy so you don't see actually what's going on. The sleight of hand obscures something. A good musician will conjure something that's not quite there, but you think it's there. Something appears that, where did that appear from? Something disappears, how could that go away? And so these aggregates are kind of the magicians that are the man that make the magic show. And as we understand how these aggregates work and how the clinging to the aggregates work, we begin to see and understand how the magic is done. And some of us, I think, can watch a magic show over and over again and be kind of surprised and awe, like, how did that happen? Many times over and over. But as soon as we know how the trick is done, then we don't have to see it anymore. So the same thing with how our mind works. The mind is a magician that makes this magic show for ourselves. And we don't understand how the trick works. The main trick that we're concerned with is suffering, the magic of suffering. And if we can see how the magic works, the magic trick, then something about suffering kind of becomes less interesting, or we get disenchanted with it, or the spell is broken that holds us to it. So we call these the word khanda in Pali, we call it aggregates in English. And it comes from the idea that it represents a heap or a pile of things. But it turns out that the word khanda has other meanings as well, that sometimes are more evocative of a certain way of understanding them. And maybe well before the Buddha, khanda meant the branches of a tree. And so you might think of these as represent five branches of a tree. The five divisions of, you know. However, that leaves the trunk. And this question, well, if those are the five branches, what about the trunk? Is that who I really am or something? But the word khanda also means the trunk of a tree. And I'd like to propose that the aggregate for today that we're talking about, mental formations, mental constructions, that's the trunk. And there's four branches on this tree. And now a tree, if you look at a tree, gaze upon a tree, admire a tree. Generally, if you see a tree in the wild, you can be amazed at the gnarled trees or the way the branches grow and way the wind has pushed the branches, the tree down, and kind of curved down in a strong wind along the coast, all kinds of things. I think you find trees. But generally, we don't say, well, that tree is wrong. That tree just blew it as a tree. That tree doesn't know what it was doing, sending out a branch in that direction or bending over this way. Or that branch is like, wow, what's that branch doing there? It shouldn't be there. And we don't like point to one of the branches and say, that's the essence of the tree. And the leaves are the essence, that's really the tree. What makes the tree is the whole tree. And what makes the tree, and when we look at the tree whole, we might just let it be a tree. We might let it be what it is. Yes, some branches are crooked, but that's the part of the wholeness, the fullness, the suchness of the tree. But it is possible to divide the tree up into parts, right? Botanists have all these little parts of trees they can refer to. I think I can pretty much claim that the tree does not divide itself into parts, does not think of itself that way. The tree thinks of it as a whole. It all works together. It's all important parts of the whole. The squirrels on the tree and the branches don't claim like this is the true, this is really the tree, my branch, and stay away from my branch. Just the squirrel sees the whole tree, perhaps. So one of the reasons why this idea of branches and trunk, wood, is part of the meaning of kanda is that in being the five areas that we cling to, that the five areas in which the fire of craving burns. Fire in the old days needed like a campfire, it needs its logs in order to, you know, to burn. And imagine that you're sitting at a campfire, and maybe it's a cold day, or just it's just nice to be sitting there at night watching the fire. And the fire begins to die out, and so you bring another log in and you put it in, and it flames up again. It dies out, you put another log in. And so the craving, clinging, suffering for the Buddha, he makes the analogy, it's like a fire. And we keep adding logs to the fire. And the logs are not wrong or bad, it's just logs. But the logs are the five aggregates, these five branches and trunks that we have divided up into pieces. And in some ways, when you put logs in a fire, those logs are no longer part of something living. There's kind of a dead tree now, dead wood. And so as we're burning from each of the aggregates, something kind of doesn't quite live in us anymore. Something is burning up and is kind of dead, perhaps. And so how to return to the whole? And not to be mesmerized by the magic show that we get attached to one of them or certain ones of them. So one of the aggregates is the fourth one, which is usually in English these days, it's translated as mental formations. The word more literally means making together, constructions, mental constructions. And I think the simplest way of understanding the aggregates is probably the most useful for practitioners. And the simplest way, I think, to understand this mental constructions is as particular kinds of thinking that's generative. thinking that constructs something, and the results of those constructions. And so the word, the Pali word sankhara, is used to refer to cooking sometimes. So a meal, a soup, that a meal that's well cooked is called susankhata. So it's well constructed, well cooked. And we talk about sometimes in English, cooking up a plan. So the way the mind is, you know, generative, and we have all kinds of ideas we can come up with. And some of you might be writing the great American novel, or great American poem as you're here, or something. I once did a great American business plan on a 3-month retreat, you know, generating something. And so this constructive nature, but it's generative, and this generative way of thinking is thinking which is has a propulsion to it, has a momentum to it, pressure behind it to think more, to generate other thoughts, and to continue to the next thought. And so sometimes we have the idea of, you know, my head is spinning. I'm spinning with thoughts and ideas and caught in a loop of thinking. The Buddha also referred to this sankhara sometimes, abhisankharoti, the verb related to it, as the momentum of a wheel that's spinning. And so imagine you have a bicycle tire or something that you have a stick, you're pushing it, or your hand pushing it, and it'll go as long as you keep pushing it. If you run along next to it and keep pushing it, it keeps going and going and going. If you keep adding a log to the fire, it keeps burning and burning and burning. So this fourth aggregate is a kind of thinking that is adding fuel, adding fire, adding fuel to the fire. Keeps it going, keeps something going, keeps something, making something happen. And there's all kinds of things that get generated by these kinds of thoughts, the kinds of thinking. One is that it's a kind of thinking that generates the other aggregates, constructs the other aggregates, which is a little bit hard for us to understand how one aggregate can construct the others. But one of the things it constructs is our prioritization of these different things. So, for example, as I go through the five again, the first is I'm calling appearances, but it's very closely related to sensations. It's the sensations that appear. So what appears in the eye is most commonly an appearance. What appears at the ear is sound. What appears at the nose is smells. And that's almost synonymous with the sensations, what we sense at the ear, hearing, what we sense of nose is smell. So it's kind of this appearance of sensations or appearance of things. The feeling tones are the pleasant and unpleasant nature, the subjective experience of that. The third aggregate is the acts of recognition, how we identify something as what it kind of is. The fourth is these constructive thoughts, and the fifth is consciousness. So it's possible for each of these that where we cling to, we're clinging to particular ones of these. So, for example, when I was a Zen student, there was a saying that Zen practice, at least in the Zen center, sometimes was a lot about looking good. Because you had all these forms, these ritual ways of standing, sitting, being. And so it was a lot about being able to sit straight and not moving, and it sits cross-legged, or and so how you appeared sometimes, how I appeared sometimes was a, you know, was a concern. I hope I look good. You know, I'm straight enough, and you know, I feel really good. I'm right and straight right now. I'm good and straight, and the person down there, that's not that person, not really sitting meditation. Not realizing that when I was having those thoughts, I wasn't doing meditation. I was just trying to look good. I was attached to the form. I was attached to the appearance, my appearance. Someone who's a bodybuilder maybe is particularly interested in maybe the appearance. Someone who's interested in their beauty. Someone who's preoccupied with their clothes more than they are with their speech. You know, has is concerned with appearances. Someone who's attached to, some people are attached to comfort, sensual pleasures. And it's really the pleasure or the avoidance of discomfort that drives them. And so when they come to a retreat center and they make sure to come early to ask, can I please be assigned to room 302? Because that's the one that has this really pleasant windows and looks at the garden. And it's just so pleasant. And pleasure is nice. Some people are then attached to what they recognize, their ideas of things, their opinions. And it's all about having just the right, you know, everything should be the right way so that fits the recognition of how the thing should be. Like I could come to the meditation hall and I have an idea of, you know, I recognize a meditation hall is a meditation hall that always has the bell on the left side of the teacher. And how did it end up on the right side? And I better train people so they know that should always be. And I keep telling people and they don't seem to get it. And it's like crucial. So I have this idea, this singular idea of what it should look like, what it should be. Of course, I don't have that idea. So, but so just kind of try to, you know, I have other ideas. I won't trouble you with. And but it's kind of like, you know, it's an idea of how, you know, it's kind of a singular, it's not a story, it's not a complicated, just like this is how it is. And I, how many times in my life have I had some idea this is how it is and it was wrong? Some singular idea, you know, so we get attached to this idea, to ideas. And then there's the our stories, our constructive ideas, our thinking. You know, the great American novel, I'm creating it, and this is it. This is what's important. You know, who? I don't really care. I'm kind of an ascetic, and I don't really care about how I appear. I don't care whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, and I don't care about singular ideas and anything. Where the bell is doesn't matter to me. But the philosophies I can create, the stories I can make, the songs I can produce, I mean, that's what life is all about. The physics you can come up with, the mathematical formulas you can make, that's where it's all at. The constructive quality. And then we get it. That's the place of attachment. And then in certain circumstances, people get attached to consciousness. And one of the places they get attached is when the other five aggregates get really quiet, where there's almost, you know, like in meditation, where somehow or other, any kind of connection to the sensual world of the body has fallen away. Connection to even things like the idea of sensual, at least pleasure and comfort, has fallen away or receded. We're not really living in the world of ideas anymore. We're not, And we're not thinking so much about things anymore, not no more generative thoughts that we get. And so there's very little left. And then something stands out that is some kind of maybe continuous feeling of an awareness that's continuous. That's consciousness. Oh, that's ultimate. Yeah, the Buddhists are right. We're not, there's no self. But what we are, what I am, is consciousness. That's it. I better stay close to that. Then I know who I am. So somehow there's this idea of consciousness then becomes an attachment that people have. And so one of the attractions to it is that because it's not directly connected to the world of change, the world of the senses, the world of ideas and stories, and the world is made up of stories, right? We're all sharing stories. But that is not part of the stories of life. And so some people then escape there. That's the place of comfort or safety. I get away from that difficult world. So each of these areas that people get attached to, and at different times in different situations, will prioritize one over the other. And so if you can ask yourself, I seem to be suffering. In this suffering I have, which of the five aggregates do I seem to be oriented towards? Is it to the world of appearances? Is it to the pleasure of the situation? Is it the ideas of how things should be? Or the stories of what it means and projected futures and how it all connects to something? Or is it consciousness? So that's a way of kind of beginning to notice, because from the Buddha's idea is that all clinging occurs to one of these five. You might divide your life up differently, but the Buddha said this is one division we do, but it's a division which is not quite accurate in that it selects out a part from the whole. It's clinging to one part of the tree and not allowing the whole tree to be there and appreciate the whole tree. So the wholeness of who we are is sometimes lost, obscured, by the preoccupation with any one part of these five areas. And these generative thoughts that we have, they're a big responsibility. That's why I think of them as a trunk of the tree in the analogy. Because a trunk of a tree is where branches grow out of. And you can actually cut the bark of a tree in certain places so that you can generate a new branch from on the trunk further down, because they can keep sprouting from there, some trees. And so this generative thinking, constructive thinking that we do. So you can go through the scales with that. Say that maybe there was a few minutes somewhere on the retreat already, maybe where you had a lot of thoughts about something accidentally. And so you were thinking about it, kind of involved. So you can go through the scales, but meaning go through the aggregates around this. You can ask yourself, in this process of thinking, what are the sensations that are present? The stronger the thinking, the more repetitive it is, the more power there is in our thinking, the more we're caught, the more likely you can feel maybe a physical sensation associated with it. You might feel, you know, I mean, you can pressure someplace, tightness, contraction. A fly full of bees kind of spinning. And I think of sometimes the brain or the mind as a puppeteer. The thinking mind is a puppeteer. And it has all these strings down to the puppet, which is us. And as we get involved in these stories and ideas and thoughts, the puppeteer is pulling different muscles. And so we have a deep furrow in our brow. The teeth clench. The shoulders go up a little bit. Sometimes the fingers tighten up a little bit. Sometimes there's a pulling in the chest, an activation. Sometimes there's a tightening in the belly. There might even be a tightening in the thighs. All kinds of different places, little micro muscles get activated. So that we can, so the, whatever we're thinking about has a connection in the whole of who we are that has to do with sensations. And it's possible to feel those sensations. And some of these thoughts that are really powerful for us, especially the ones that generate suffering, some of that suffering is in fact the tension that builds up in our system, in our body. And one of the options we have when there's a lot of, when you see the tension, is if it's easy enough, we can relax the tension. And there's a kind of mutual relationship back and forth between the puppeteer and where the strings are pulling. The puppeteer might pull the string, but if the limb that's being pulled relaxes, then the puppeteer relaxes also that particular area. So some of you know that I talk about sometimes a thinking muscle, the kind of, especially in, sometimes in the area of the brain or the forehead or the head someplace, kind of the narrowing, the tightening, the pressure that's associated with thinking. If we don't, if that doesn't relax, it kind of keeps generating more thinking. It's part of the why the self-generating quality of these generative thoughts has to do with that pressure that's there. It's kind of like, as I like to say, that if you take a new tube of toothpaste, take off the cap, and then squeeze, the toothpaste comes out. And if you keep squeezing, it just keeps coming out. And you can brush away the paste as it comes out. Away, away, away. But it'll keep coming out until you stop squeezing. It doesn't work so well, the toothpaste analogy, because eventually you empty the tube. And there's no emptying the tube in you, the paste, the toothpaste of thought. As long as you have that pressure, tension around it, it's kind of like you're keep, you know, pushing the paste out. So I apologize if some of you think that that was disrespectful for your thinking to associate it with toothpaste. But... And so we learn to relax, so we're not physically not kind of encouraging that. And then we can ask ourselves, is all this thinking I'm doing, is it pleasant or unpleasant? Well, it's all, some of it can be pleasant, some of it is unpleasant. Sometimes both go on. Some of the tension and pressure we might feel unpleasant. If we're attached to the, or preoccupied with the pleasure or pleasant or unpleasant, that can generate more thoughts. Sometimes the unpleasantness of it, of the tension, the tightness, the whatever feelings there are there, can we recoil from it. We kind of react to it with more thoughts. It kind of encourages more thinking. If it's pleasant, the sensations connected to thinking, by all means, let's think some more. Let's get some more pleasure going. After all, it's hard to be on retreat. So there are people who have told me, you know, they gave themselves a good thinking, a whole sitting to think because they deserved it. After all the practice of the retreat so far. So they just... And so is the attachment around the pleasure and the comfort, the discomfort, the pleasure and the pain associated with thinking. Is the attachment to some kind of idea that things should be a certain way? I could be thinking a lot about my meditation practice and thinking about, well, what kind of technique should I do? Should I do this, that technique or this technique? Or let me see if I can review the practice. Let me try to figure out what's the problem here. And the reason I'm thinking so much is because I have an idea that meditation should always be pleasant. It should always be pleasant and calm. And if it's not, then I'm doing something wrong. And that generates, so that the attachment to an idea, it should be this way. I was so constipated when I was in Asia practicing. And this distended belly that was sometimes... or sometimes because I was ate too much, sit down to meditate and like, I don't know, oh, I can't meditate now. And this is all wrong. And I would spin out in my thoughts until I learned it doesn't have to be pleasant, my meditations, for mindfulness to be mindfulness. I just have to be mindful of how unpleasant it is. And things got a lot easier when I dropped my ideas of that meditation had to be a certain way or some kind of experience that it had to be. But I was attached to it, you know, some idea. And I recognized, when I recognized the full stomach, it wasn't just a full stomach I recognized. I recognized bad meditator or, you know, something, or wrong meditation. So there's that's where the attachment was. Where the attachment is to the stories themselves. Some of you might be really good storytellers, telling yourself stories of catastrophes that are coming, or retelling ancient war stories. There are all kinds of things. We tell ourselves stories, telling ourselves about, you know, things that are, you know, the tone of the voice, the emotions that come with it, the images, the ideas, the events that we're reviewing, could be distressing, could be depressing. Some psychologists have said the leading cause of depression is rumination. Kind of repeating over and over again, the same kind of thoughts, ideas, which are debilitating, that somehow depressing even to have those voices say the same thing over and over and over again. So in that case, when we're in where the attachment is to the stories. Somehow something inside of us feels compelled to do it over and over and over again. And what we're seeing operating here is really clearly then is the fourth aggregate, the generative, constructive nature of thinking, constructive thinking, and how there's a pressure, there's a pull, when we think, there's like a pressure to move on to the next thought, to have the next thought. There's a stickiness. There's a momentum in the thinking. There's a an attachment, but maybe even a craving to think more, or a desperation. Like, we have to find a solution, we have to find a way. We Maybe we can think ourselves out of it or imagine our way out of it. And so this forward movement. And so we can feel the forward movement. We can feel the momentum, the pressure. And it becomes clear, little bit can become clear. It's kind of difficult to see this. But when the mind gets quieter, quiet enough, occasionally quiet and still, and there's not any charge around thinking, you might discover that you can have a thought that there's no pressure to it behind it, no momentum. It doesn't kind of generate the next thinking, the next story. So I don't know if there's something you can look at here in this room that you can just look at and say, oh, and have a thought, oh, like a thought of what it is. You know, I don't know. And you can just have the thought and it doesn't go anywhere. Nothing follows. It just don't. And you feel that there's no pressure to have more thoughts about the same thing. It's just there it is. And there's kind of like almost like a peace or an absence or a gap, space after that neutral thought, because it itself doesn't generate more. Thinking can become quieter. The generative thoughts sometimes can speed up, and they can kind of like come, you know, real rapidity, just like one follows right after the other. The thoughts might feel like they're really important. I need to think these thoughts. That's an attachment. But maybe you can grant yourself that you can have to have those thoughts. But you have to think of them so fast. Maybe you can have think of them leisurely. Leisurely, take your time. If you're going to think, might as well do it in a nice way. If you can't stop your thinking, can you change how you think so that you think calmly? So you think slowly. So you let there be a little bit of space in the conversation. You know the idea that if you're only talking in the conversation with someone, there's no time to listen to them. Do you ever listen to yourself? Why don't you pause a little bit so you can listen to what's going on? Find out what else is going on. And these five aggregates is a little guide to understanding what else to pay attention to. The sensations, the feeling tones, the ideas, how they play out. And so what the constructions do, the generative thoughts, they're a little bit, that's where the momentum or the prioritizations or the value, selecting out and focusing on the different aggregates. So our interest in the different aggregates is constructed by the thinking we do, the ideas that are there, the stories that are there. And so it said by the Buddha that it's the constructive thinking that constructs the other aggregates. Whether that's really true or not, maybe it's not that important. But one way we can see that it constructs it is that it's constructing, pulling it out of the hole and making it its own thing. It's like pulling the branch off the tree and saying, look at this. Not realizing you broke the branch off the tree and you know, it's not really the tree and the branch is not the tree anymore. We didn't make the branch, but we made the branch that's no longer a part of the tree. We made it its own thing. So the generative thinking we may do is so powerful. And so to begin getting a handle on how this thinking is a hugely important part of the practice. And so you could try, you know, go through the scales, go through these five scales, especially the first four, and see where is the, what's really going on here? Where's the, what's most activated? Where's what's most the focus of? Maybe what are you attached to? This going through the scales then can also be done in relationship to how you're being mindful, how you're attending to all these things. So for example, with your mindfulness, are you prioritizing sensations? With the idea that some sensations are better for a practice than others. The pressure of a distended stomach is not really what it's about. But the smooth, soft, silk quality of the breathing, oh, that's what meditation is about. So we're prioritizing. We want something to be. Just we might be prioritizing the things that are pleasant and unpleasant. We might be looking for that, reacting to that, wanting that, trying to make it happen. There might be sensations of tension associated with how we're being mindful. There might be a strain, it might be a pushing or being in a hurry, leaning forward. There might be some generative quality of generative thinking associated with how we're mindful. Oh, I wonder. Now, if I just focus a little bit more on the end of the out-breath, then perhaps I can get a little bit more concentrated. But to do that, I need to sit up a little bit straighter so there's more space in my chest for the breath. And then I need to really kind of zero in and keep my focus really tight. I'm making all these stories up. That's all, they're all generative thoughts, ideas. I'm telling myself a little story about how meditation is supposed to go. And I'm not really present. And that generative thinking around how to practice mindfulness has its own suffering in it. It might be very, very subtle. It might be a little tension. But this going through the scales of aggregates can be applied to how you're being aware. And that's a kind of protection of the awareness. So you're not adding suffering on top of it. You're not adding stress, tension. So you can stay soft, relaxed, open. Not adding any generative qualities. And that's kind of the direction in which the practice is going, is quieting down the generative functioning of the mind, the constructive function of the mind that's generating and constructing and perpetuating, cooking something, always cooking something. And just allowing the tree to be a tree, allowing things to settle down, and be present for what's here more fully in a simple, very simple way. Simple awareness, simple attention to this. And part of what's amusing about all this is that the simple attention to what's here is some point, what's here is the magic show. Or the magician is trying to do the magic. But you know the trick now. Oh, there's that trick. And you smile. Oh, I'm having those thoughts, those desires, those judgments. Oh. So your mind will keep doing all kinds of things, all kinds of thoughts, all kinds of stuff. Someone says the mind has no shame. That's not accurate, I think. But you start seeing, oh, that's generative thinking. If you have the idea that I'm the thinker, I'm the one doing these great thoughts, I'm the one who's doing this, not doing it, then you're attached to the third aggregate, the idea of me. You're really attached to me, and there might be a sensation connected to that attachment. There might be tightness, a clinging. That might be that might have qualities of the second aggregate, pleasant or unpleasant. So here we are. We're not in a hurry. And not being in a hurry and you stop the inner chatter long enough to listen, what do you hear? What do you feel? What do you sense? What do you see? Which of the aggregates appears? If you listen, what attachment, what clinging appears? It's part of it. As you watch your generative thinking, is it that you believe you're clinging? Do you believe the generative thoughts? Are you wedded to them, committed to them? If you are, then you can go through the scales with that commitment, with that attachment. Everything gets folded back into this, doing the scales. Everything gets folded back into being present and exploring and being feeling and seeing what's here, including the very way in which you're doing the scales. So it's you're practicing the mindfulness in a way that feels that it leads to peace. It is peace. And then at the other side of clinging, when we see, sense, touch, non-clinging, we'll see that that is not generative. That doesn't produce more of the same. That doesn't add to the constructions, to the stories. It's freedom from the stories, it's from the constructions. And at that point, the tree gets to be the tree, and you get to be yourself. In your suchness, in your wholeness, where there's nothing wrong with you.